Am I? Yes, I'm on.
Please be seated.
I don't have people standing this long at my church. They're already in the seats by the time I get up. Look, it's an absolute privilege and an honour to be here. I love what you've done to your stage area. This is fantastic. As Anna briefly mentioned, we've just had a major change in our church. We've moved from the Western Shore, where we have been for the last 51 years, across to the East, where I personally think, look, I live on this side of the river. This is definitely the best side of the river to have church and to do everything. But it was a fairly major change for our church. For 51 years, we've met over the other side. And for 51 years, we've had morning services. And in the recent years, we've had two morning services. So we've gone from that side of the river to your side of the river, the anointed side. And we've gone from morning services to an afternoon service. And I want to tell you something about change. Change is always a lot scarier coming than going. And once you get over the hump, it's amazing how quickly you get used to sleeping in the morning. First Sunday morning, I remember I woke up and I felt guilty for a few seconds and then just enjoyed lying in bed till about 10 o'clock. And then since then, it's been fantastic. God has really blessed us since making that transition. It's been a growing time for our church because we've had to change a lot of stuff. You don't realize how easy you have it when you've got your own building that's set up for you every week. And we've had to do the whole set up and pack up thing over at Citywide. And that's been quite interesting. But we're really thrilled that they have opened their hearts. It's another church in the city, a Baptist church. They've opened their hearts to us and allowed us to use their facility in the afternoon. And it's going very, very well. So you guys had Steve Kennedy here last weekend, Sunday night. Now, did he do the whole take out his phone and talk about connecting, that thing? That was really good. I just wanted to mention that because I have a new phone here this morning. It's an iPhone 4. I just thought I'd bring that out. And now we'll... And I didn't have to line up for it. One of the guys in our church rang me on Friday and said, Dermot, guess what? I got an iPhone 4. He said, I lined up at 11:30 last night, Thursday night. And he said, by 3 a.m. I had my own iPhone 4 in my hand. I said, that's fantastic. I said, I walked straight in at 8 o'clock this morning and picked one up. The blessing of God is amazing when it's on your life, isn't it? So I'm praying for him, healing of memories and all that sort of stuff. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here this morning. I do count it as a real privilege. You know, one of the things that I love about Tassie is the relationships that are here in our city, you know, across the churches. And I saw the discounted impact. I should have waited till today to register rather than registering earlier. But there's a wonderful relationship that God is building amongst all the churches and the pastors. And it, you know, our church needs dozens and dozens of healthy, strong churches. We should never ever get threatened by other churches and their progress or whatever. I think in a city our size, we have what in the Greater Hobart area over 250,000 people. That means we could have five churches of 20,000 people and still not reach the entire city. Now, I don't know if we'll ever get to that point. We have churches that size. But the reality of it is the majority of Tasmanians this morning aren't in church. And we need all of our churches to be healthy and to be strong and to be growing. And it thrills my heart to see what God is doing in your church. And the reports that I hear from Dave and from other people that are involved with your church are always fantastic, which you kind of expect from the pastor, don't you? You want the pastor to be saying good things about his own church. But I do. I'm constantly hearing really good reports. And I just want to encourage you that God is doing something, as you probably know, right across the board in all of our churches here in Hobart, especially those that are really, really passionate about the people that are outside our walls. You know, it's one thing to be passionate about our own church family, but to be passionate about people that currently don't attend church, all the others, and there are far, far too many of them. I think we'd all agree with that. This morning, what I'd like to share with you is from a series that we've been running in our church over the winter period. During winter, every year at Grace, we do the theme Loving People, and we talk about relationships. We talk about how to love others in a really practical way. And part of learning to love others is understanding who you are and what's going on or what's happening in the relationships around you. Something that's gone over very, very well for us in the past during this particular theme in our church is where we take a book that the wives in our church would love their husbands to read, and then we teach from it for the 3 months. This year, we've been spending time in a great book called Everyone's Normal Till You Get to Know Them by John Ortberg. If you've never read the book, I'd encourage you to go and buy it. It's fantastic. The first chapter in the book is called The Porcupine's Dilemma, and I just want to spend a little bit of time bringing out some of his key thoughts from that first chapter, because I believe it's applicable to all of us. Have you ever been in a store where they've had one of those reduced to clear bins? Quite often the items that they're selling have faults in them, which you accept due to the cheap price. You know that you're buying things as is, which means they're damaged goods. Now, they don't tell you where the fault is, but you know that there's a fault somewhere in them. When you do find it, it's non-refundable. You can't exchange the item for a better item because that's what you bought. You bought an as-is item and accepted the consequences when you paid for it. When we deal with human beings, we've come to the as-is corner of the universe. Think about anyone in your life, maybe someone you've had a long-term relationship with, someone you love. That person is slightly irregular. That person comes with a little tag, damaged goods. There's a flaw here, a streak of deception, a cutting tongue, a out-of-control temper. I'm not going to tell you where it is, but it's there. So when you find it, and you'll find it, don't be surprised. If you want to have a relationship with this model of human, there's only one way, and that's as is. Now, we're tempted to live under the illusion that somewhere out there, there are people who are normal. When we enter relationships with the illusion that people are normal, we resist the truth that they're not. We enter into an endless attempt to fix them, control them, or pretend that they're not what they are. And one of the great marks of maturity is the ability to accept the fact that everyone comes as is. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that people enter relationships with their own particular ideals and dreams of what community should look like. He wrote, "But God's grace quickly frustrates all such dreams. A great disillusionment with others, with Christians in general, and if we're fortunate, with ourselves, is bound to overwhelm us, as surely as God desires to lead us to an understanding of genuine Christian community." He says, "The sooner this moment of disillusionment comes over the individual and the community, the better for both. Those who love their dream of a Christian community more than the Christian community itself become destroyers of the Christian community, even though their personal intentions may be ever so honest, earnest, and sacrificial." I remember when I first became a Christian, I was in the army in Townsville, and I was amazed at how good the people in the church were compared to the friends that I had at the army barracks. I was thinking, these Christians are amazing. And right from the very start, the very first thing that I ever felt God say to me, outside of what I read in his word, I heard this whisper in my heart, "Don't look at the people, look at me. Don't look at the people, look at me." And I'm thinking, why? Why? They're perfect. They're amazing. These people are wonderful. Who knows that it wasn't too long before I came face to face with some realities. People in churches, you and I, we come with an as-is tag. We're all a bit weird. We're all a bit strange. We're all a bit damaged. Sometimes we can do things that hurt other people. I would hope to think it's unintentional, but we sometimes do. Guess what? That's part of the human condition. And we shouldn't be surprised when it happens. God isn't. And we shouldn't be either. Of course, the most painful part of the experience is realizing that you and I are in the as-in bin as well. Now, throughout history, men and women have resisted coming or owning up to that little tag about themselves. We try to separate the world into normal, healthy people like you and I and difficult people like all the rest. We all want to look normal, to think of ourselves as normal, but the writers of the scriptures, they insist that there is no one normal. All of us, they say, like sheep, have gone astray. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. None of us is normal, at least as God defines normality. Now, one of the things that I personally love about the Bible is how it talks about the human condition, warts and all. You know, if I was writing the Bible, I would probably leave out just about all of Genesis. Genesis is one of those really, really uncomfortable books because it talks about all sorts of things that happen in God's people that honestly you'd have to show the story after 9 o'clock at night on TV. Because it's warts and all. It's not a cleaned up, sanctified rendition of the Brady Bunch. And as probably some of us know, I mean, I grew up watching the Brady Bunch, but a whole stack of stuff's come out about the Brady Bunch, hasn't it, in just recent years, so I probably shouldn't even have them in my sermon. You just have to read through the first few chapters of Genesis to get a snapshot of dysfunctional human relationships 101. Now, why does Genesis include all that stuff? Because the writer is trying to establish a really important truth. Everybody's weird. Everybody is weird. Every one of us has habits we can't control, past deeds we can't undo, and flaws we can't correct. I think we need a new greeting in our churches, and we've actually started to instigate this at Grace. It hasn't kind of caught on as well as I'd like it to, but we're getting there. It's like this. So we say this at Grace now. Hi, I'm from Grace, and I'm weird. Kind of like gets it out there right at the start. I'm not perfect. I've got my flaws. I've got my hang-ups. I'm a bit strange. I have weird views of the world. I get a bit cranky. I'm not like Jesus, who was perfect. I'm weird. And I think if we started like that at church, say, come to our church, we're all weird. They go, wow. And if they go, I don't want to be part of that, that means somebody's living in denial. And denial is not a river in Egypt. Yes, we know that one. From the time of Adam in the Garden of Eden, sin and hiding have been as inevitable as death and taxes. Some people are pretty good at hiding. We've probably all met them. But the weirdness is still there. You get close enough to anyone and you'll see it. Everyone's normal till you get to know them. Unfortunately, if you have a false expectation of people, especially Christian people, I hear this all the time. Oh, they're supposed to be a good Christian person and look at the way they're acting. Listen, that's not reality. Every one of us is broken. Every one of us is damaged. Every one of us has flaws. And if you have this expectation that Christian people are supposed to be perfect, you will be disappointed and disillusioned. And unfortunately, what happens for a lot of people, too many people, is that when they get disillusioned with Christian people, they get disillusioned with God as well. They go, well, if you're supposed to be a follower of God and you're weird, God must be weird too. Or God mustn't be able to do what he says he can do, which is to take a broken human heart and make it whole. So we've got to be up front. We've got to tell people, hey, I'm broken, I'm damaged, I'm weird, just like you. So they don't have any preconceived ideas. And then they realize, hang on, you're broken, you're damaged, you're weird, and yet God still loves you and accepts you the way you are. You mean you don't have to become perfect before God accepts you? And when you get that, when people start to realize that, you're able to just take a deep breath, sit back, and start to be true to yourself. The weirdness is still there, no matter how much we try to cover it up. You get close to anyone, and you'll see it. Your wife or your husband doesn't suddenly become a worse person when you get married to them. They don't become lazier. They don't become more critical. They were like that all the time. You're just getting to know them a bit better. And guess what? You can't trade them in and get a better model, because the new model is going to be exactly the same as the old model. We're all weird. We're all damaged. We might look good on the outside, but once you start to scratch, once you start to dig a little bit deeper, you start to realize that. And yet the yearning to attach and connect, to love and be loved, is the fiercest longing of the human soul. Our need for community with people and with God, with the God who made us, is to the human spirit what food, air, and water are to the human body. That need will not go away, even in the face of all our weirdness. It marks us from the nursery to the grave. As frustrating as people can be, it's hard to find a good substitute. Call it a tribe, call it a clan, call it a network, call it a family, says Jane Howard. Whatever you call it, whoever you are, you need one. It's not good for man to be alone, the Bible tells us. Dallas Willard says the natural condition of life for human beings is reciprocal rootedness in others. Edward Halliwell, a senior lecturer at Harvard Medical School, speaks of the basic human need for community. He uses the term connection, the sense of being part of something that matters, something larger than ourselves. We need face-to-face interactions. We need to be seen and known and served and to do these same things for others. We need to bind ourselves to each other with promises of loyalty and love made and kept. These connections involve other people, of course, and especially God. But Halliwell observes that people draw life even from connecting with pets to music and to nature. And there's a reason for this. Neil Plantinga notes that the Hebrew prophets had a word for just this kind of connectiveness of all things. It was the word shalom. I used to think that the word shalom simply meant peace. But it's so much more. Shalom, the webbing together of God, humans, and all creation in justice, fulfillment, and delight. Try to imagine what such a world would look like if our world was normal, the way God wants it to be normal. In a world where shalom prevailed, marriages would be healthy and children would be safe. Those who have too much would give to those who don't have enough. Israeli and Palestinian children would play together on the West Bank, and their parents would build each other houses. In offices and corporate boardrooms, executives would secretly scheme to help their colleagues succeed. They would compliment them behind their backs. Newspapers would be filled with accounts of courage and moral beauty. Talk shows would feature mothers and daughters who love each other deeply, wives who give birth to their husbands' children, and men who secretly enjoy dressing as men. Disagreements would be settled with grace and civility. There would still be lawyers, perhaps, but they'd have really useful jobs like delivering pizza, which would be non-fat and low in cholesterol. Doors would have no locks. Cars would have no alarms. Schools would have teachers and students appreciating and valuing each other. And at recess, every kid would get picked on a team. Churches would never split. People would neither be hurried or bored. No father would ever again say, "I'm too busy," to a disappointed child. Our national sleep deficit would be paid off. Coffee shops would still exist, but they'd only sell decaf. I don't know about that one. No. That's demonic, man. Divorce courts and battered women's shelters would be turned into community recreation centres. Every time a human being touched another, it would be to express encouragement, affection, and love. No one would be lonely or afraid. People of different races would join hands. They would honour and be enriched by their differences and be united in their common humanity. That's what we would look like if our world, if you and I, lived up to the norms God set for human life. Our world would be truly normal. Now, one day it will be, but it's far from that today. Dietrich Bonhoeffer once again wrote, "Whoever cannot stand being in community should be aware of being alone." Some people fear being hurt or losing their freedom if they get too close to others, so they withdraw into their work or their hobbies or watching TV, but isolation doesn't work either. I didn't get here on my own. My identity and my purpose are tied inextricably to my relationships. I'm the son of Vincent and June Catulli. I'm the brother of Deirdre, Fiona, Martina, Kelly, Marianne, Sean, and Francine. That many, yes. Six sisters. One brother. That's why I'm so balanced. Yeah. I'm the husband of Deborah, the father of... Who am I the father of? Aidan, Caitlin, Ryan, and Erin. I'm the senior pastor of Grace Church. I'm the friend of countless people and the neighbor of dozens of Rokebyites. Or actually, we don't call it Rokeby where I come from. We call it Lower Acton. The Acton people don't appreciate that, but I don't care. I wasn't put on this earth. You weren't put on this earth merely to please and amuse ourselves. And people who seek to live for themselves alone, says Bonhoeffer, plunge into the bottomless pit of vanity, self-infatuation, and despair. You see, we were created to draw life and nourishment from each other. Community, living in vital connectiveness with others, is vital. It's essential to human life. Researcher Renee Spitz showed that infants who are not held and hugged and touched, even if they have parents who give them food and clothes, suffer from retarded neurological development. And the earliest studies of suicide showed the major risk factor to be social isolation. Now, that doesn't mean that you're not part of a group. You know, people can be part of a group but feel cut off and isolated. But the most important reason to pursue deep community is not for the physical or emotional benefits it brings, great as those may be. Community is a place God made for us. Community is the place where God meets with us. But here's the rub. Here's the dilemma. Here's the problem. How do you pursue the wonderful ideal of community with actual, real life people? It's okay on TV. It's okay when you're reading the book. But how do you do it in real life? How do you... real, weird, not normal, as is, dysfunctional people. Your friends, your colleagues, your spouse, your children, your parents, your connect groups, your church, your co-workers. Can it really happen? Well, the North American common porcupine, and the title of my message is called The Porcupine's Dilemma. The North American common porcupine is a member of the rodent family. You didn't know that, did you? You thought it was some fuzzy little bear thing. It's a member of the rodent family that has around 30,000 quills attached to its body. Each quill can be driven into its enemy, and the enemy's body heat will cause the microscopic barbs on the end of the quill to expand and lock the quill into the flesh of the animal that's trying to attack it. Causing infection, they can end up festering. If it penetrates a vital organ, it can cause death. The porcupine is not generally considered a lovable animal. The Latin name for the porcupine is Erythizon dorsatum. Probably not how you would say it if you're a Latin-speaking person, but that's how I pronounce it. I'm phonetic. And it means the irritable back. And they all have one. No one keeps one as a pet. As a general rule, porcupines have two methods for handling relationships: withdrawal and attack. They either head for a tree or they stick out their quills. They're generally solitary animals, but they don't always want to be alone. Once a year, in late autumn, their thoughts turn toward love. But getting close to one can be a risky business, even if you're a porcupine yourself. Fear and anger make these little creatures kind of dangerous to be around. So here's the porcupine's dilemma. How do you get close without getting hurt? And that's our dilemma too. Every one of us carries our own little arsenal, our own little barbs, barbs that have names such as rejection, condemnation, resentment, arrogance, selfishness, envy, self-pity, contempt. Some people are experts at hiding theirs, but get close enough and you'll soon find out where they are. We too learn to survive through a combination of withdrawal and attack. Yet we want to get close. We meet neighbors, go on dates, join churches, form friendships, get married, have children. We try to figure out how to get close without getting hurt. We wonder if there isn't a softer, less barbed creature out there somewhere. And of course, most of us can usually think of a number of prickly porcupines in our own lives. But the problem just isn't them. You see, I'm somebody's porcupine. And so are you. Dallas Willard writes that assault and withdrawal are the two essential forms of relational sin. We assault others when we act against what is the best for them. And this can even be true when they've given us their consent to give a beer to an alcoholic, for example. We withdraw from someone when we regard their well-being as a matter of indifference to us. Attack and withdrawal are practiced by every human being on the face of the earth, and they damage every marriage, family, workplace, and church. At root, they are the two expressions of the one great sin, which is lack of love, the violation of the one great command. All of our relational mismanagement is really a variation on these two tendencies of the fallen human heart, to withdraw or to attack. When we feel threatened, we want to hurt others or hide from them. We head for a tree or we stick out our quills. But there's a better way. Things don't have to be that way. And you kind of figured that, didn't you? On rare occasions, one porcupine will share space with another and they become friends. Not only that, they figure out how to get together long enough to make sure there's another generation of porcupines following along behind them. And naturalist David Costello writes this. He says, male and females may remain together for some days before mating. They may touch paws and even walk on their feet, or hind feet, in the so-called dance of the porcupine. It turns out there is an answer to the age-old question, how do porcupines make love? They pull in their quills and they learn how to dance. Porcupines learn that they and their fellow porcupines come as is. Like people, our church, your church, is full of as-is people. You won't find anyone perfect here. We're all a little bit weird. We're all damaged goods in need of God's help to teach us how to dance with others, to get close without being stabbed by quills, to stop hiding and fighting, and to start loving. What is it that I want you to take home with you this morning? Well, it's an understanding that you're in the right place. Now, you might have been thinking that I was going to come up with something really deep and insightful on how to get close to a prickly porcupine. You need to know that you're in the right place. This church is the right place for you. It is full of other people just like you. You will never find the perfect church. We have a saying in our church, if you find the perfect church, don't join it, you'll wreck it. Because we're all weird. We're all broken, we're all damaged. And yet, in community, something incredible. God is able to do something incredible. Now, I do not believe, and you might think this is just because I don't have enough faith. And maybe I might change my mind later on in life, all right? That's the provision. But I don't believe that we will reach perfection whilst being on planet Earth. I don't believe you'll ever meet the perfect person on planet Earth. Even somebody who you think is really compatible with you, you're going to find that there are things that they do or they say or ways that they react that just rub you up the wrong way. That's life. That's life. You're part of a community here of as-is people on a journey toward wholeness. None of us is perfect, so don't worry, you'll fit right in. And if you have a tendency to judge others so as to take the spotlight off your own flaws, you can stop doing that and join in the club. It's a whole lot better being part of the group than sitting in judgment of it. God is wanting to always. He's always at work in our church, in our community, in our group or circle of friends. He's always at work to restore and to heal. But before you can start that process, there needs to be a recognition of our own brokenness first and foremostly. Because it's very hard to judge somebody else and to think that somebody else is a wicked sinner when you realize that you're a stuff up as well. Sorry to say that in church on Sunday morning. But you understand where I'm coming from here? We have to appreciate that we're broken. And you know what? I actually find that most people appreciate that they are broken. They just don't appreciate the fact that other people are broken. They don't appreciate the fact that their pastor is broken, that their leaders are broken, that the board is broken, that the elders in the church are broken, that the youth pastor is broken. They don't appreciate that. They're looking for perfection in other people, but they appreciate the fact that they're broken. Accept me as I am, but I won't accept you as you are. You have to be perfect. Now, I'm overgeneralizing there to make a point. I don't believe that's part of your church or your culture. But if it's been part of your heart personally, stop it. Yeah. Stop. You know, when I read Jesus' words. He's amazing. You know, he doesn't go back into your past all that much. He doesn't talk about, you know, where you've come from. He deals with where you currently are. And he talks about your future. And you know what? A lot of this stuff that causes friction and tension in relationships just needs to be stopped. Just got to stop doing it. But, everybody's on their own personal journey. And you are not their policeman. And you're not here to make them stop doing stuff. God is the only one that I have discovered in my life who has the ability to change the reason I want to do that stuff. See, I can stop doing stuff because I'm afraid of what other people will think. But here is the incredible power of God. And I was just thinking about it again as I was sitting here this morning. God can actually change the very motivation of your heart. When I first became a Christian, I realized that if I love God, then I would have to clean up my act because my act was fairly dirty. So I'm thinking, I've got to clean up things. I've got to stop doing certain things. And I stopped doing those things, but there was a thing inside of me that still wanted to do them. Now, I know you guys don't experience that at all. Once you decide that. But inside, I still wanted to do them. You know, today, to this very day, there are things that I wouldn't mind doing that I shouldn't. You're all looking at me going, hell, I can't believe a pastor just said that. Well, there is. And I'm not saying I do them. But I bring them before God. I say, God, there are parts of my heart that are still, they're broken, they're damaged. Because you see, the reason why God says don't sin is because sin damages you and the people around you. It's not because he's a killjoy. It's not because he wants to stop you having fun. It's because God wants the very best for you. See, God is love and he's also all-knowing. So you combine the two together and everything that he asks you to do is for your very, very best. So when I have something inside of me that wants to do something that I know is not the right thing, then I shouldn't get upset with God. I shouldn't go, oh, you're a killjoy, you stopped me from having fun. What I should be doing is bringing my heart before God and saying, God, my heart is damaged and broken, and I'm not normal the way you consider normal, the way you created mankind initially, originally. God, can you change this desire inside of me? Can you take out this thing in me that wants to do this? When I first got married, and I'll close on this story just to show you how things change. When I first got married, I married a very, very holy woman. She's very close to Jesus, much closer than I was. And I pretended I was really close to Jesus. And don't get me wrong, I love Jesus with everything that is within me. But I would watch certain things on TV that she would go, oh, you can't watch that. It was kind of like if it was anything above play school. We got no. But I used to like watching action things and people getting killed and, you know, blood and guts. And I used to say to her, oh, honey, don't worry about it. It's just a movie. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. She'd go, oh, no, I just can't watch it. So I would send her to bed and say, oh, I just can't sleep at the moment. And I'd watch my programs late at night. And inside of me, there was a part of me that thought, well, she's probably right. Watching people gratuitously murdering other people has got to do something for you. Yeah, it's got to change something on the inside when it comes to your valuing of life and all that sort of stuff. I kind of thought that intellectually, but on the inside I thought, she's just been too sheltered. She's been brought up, you know, too sheltered. And so I then got to the point where I thought, well, you know, she feels fairly strongly about this. And I actually agree with her, so I probably better stop doing it. And so I did it under sufferance. I stopped watching stuff under sufferance. You ever been there? Well, you kind of like doing it, and you think you're doing something real spiritual, and you're doing it, and I thought, I'll stop doing it. But for years, I kind of secretly thought she was a bit straight, a bit kind of square, a bit kind of like, don't tell her I said this, by the way. Right? You do not tell her I said. But I was kind of thinking, oh, my wife, you know, she's just a little bit too on that side. But you know what? I've noticed a change has occurred in my heart. And it first struck me about 2 years ago Gus Yearsley, my executive pastor, and I, we went out to see a movie together. We don't do this too often, but we thought, let's just go and catch a movie together. And so he had spoken to a mate of his from Western Australia, and there was this movie with Leo DiCaprio, that guy. He was sort of like an undercover drug guy, and there was this other bad guy who became a cop so that he could look after, you know, he could safeguard what was happening in the city with the drugs and stuff. And then there was this other cop that was involved in it. And there's a movie about these guys, you know. And I tell you what, three quarters of the way through, I turned to Gus and said, boy, I'm really glad Ron's not with us. Ron Wilson, for those that don't know, was a senior pastor that I took over from. I said, I'm really glad. And it was like the people were getting shot at point blank range right throughout this movie. And I'm sitting there feeling sick. Now, I was in the army. I was an infantry soldier in the army. I was going to make a career of learning how to shoot and kill people. I like those sorts of movies, but I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, oh, I just, seeing people point a gun at somebody's head and pulling a trigger and that person falling down dead, I walked out of there going, I'm different. Something's changed on the inside. And that process has continued to this day. I now no longer look at my wife and think that she's too pure or too, I just think that, hey, in that area, she's a lot more whole than I am. She's a lot more together than I am. If I could just have the musos back, that'd be great. Is there a clock somewhere around here? Oh, there it is, right in front of me. Please set clock each week. Oh, somebody set it an hour ahead. Look at that, it says 12:17. That's not right. What time do we normally finish? 11:15? Okay. All right. When I came in here this morning and just during worship, I was asking the Holy Spirit, Holy Spirit, what is it that you want to do? What do you want to do in our hearts today? And I just had this sense, you know, we're all on a journey out of brokenness to wholeness. And right now, I'd like everybody here in the auditorium just to close your eyes. You know, God never condemns. God will correct, but he never condemns. And the reason why he corrects is because he loves us and he doesn't want us to hurt ourselves. Critics condemn. Condemnation destroys people. But God's correction restores people. Maybe you've been part of the group of people that sit and judge. Or maybe you're one of those people that you're kind of feeling like, God, is there any hope for me? Because I'm so in touch with my brokenness that I don't know how it could ever change. Maybe you're someone who's struggling with a relationship because the other person isn't changing. And you really wish they would. Wherever you come from, whatever sphere of life you're in at the moment, every one of us is broken. Every one of us is faulty. Every one of us comes as is. And the beauty of God is he knows that. And he loves us and accepts us as we are. And when I was asking the Holy Spirit, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? I just felt like he was saying, I just want to touch hearts this morning and bring healing and bring wholeness and bring hope. Hope for a better day. Hope for a better day. You see, when we're walking with God, when we're following Jesus, we release into our lives the incredible life-transforming power of God Almighty, the creator of mankind, the only one who can fix mankind. We allow him access to our lives when we're following him. And he does not condemn you today. He's not saying you just don't cut the mustard. He's not saying you don't come up to the level that he's got for you. He loves you totally, unconditionally. And if there is something in your life that you've really struggled with, that you haven't been able to get over, that it's just been there all the time, and it's that Achilles heel, that chink in your armor, what I want you to do this morning, as we sit here with our eyes closed, I want you to bring that to God. I want you to bring your heart to Jesus and just hold it before him. Could be a habit that you can't break. It might be a temper that you can't control. It might be the words that just seem to jump out of your mouth before you've engaged your brain. And you, why am I like that? It might be disappointment with others. It might be disillusionment with the church even. We've all been there. See, the church doesn't exist outside of the people that you're sitting beside. And what we're really saying when we say we're disillusioned with the church is that we're disillusioned with people, because we've discovered that they're broken like we are and we haven't forgiven them. There are broken people in your life, and some of you need to forgive them this morning because they haven't been everything that you wanted them to be for you. You need to let them go. Release them to God. Stop trying to change them. Stop wishing they could change. And realize that the only place that you can see change is in your own heart, in your own life. You don't control other people. God can work on their hearts. But you have a responsibility for your own heart. Maybe this morning there are people here, and you know, I've been talking about a loving God. I've been talking about a God who accepts us as is. And you're not, in your own life, in your own journey, you're not connected with him today. You know, I don't want you to leave this place without realizing one of the most liberating truths known to mankind. God's arms are always wide open toward his children. And if you want to be connected with God, if you want to have Jesus living in your life, all you have to do is reach out to him and acknowledge him. You see, love is waiting to be wanted. God waits to be wanted. You don't have to jump through hoops. You don't have to go through a whole stack of weird stuff to become a child of God. See, as the Bible said earlier on, all of us like sheep have gone astray. We followed our own path. And God is always wooing us back to himself. He's always calling us to himself. And I would hate to think that you came here to church this morning and then left without getting connected with him. And it's so simple. All you have to do is reach out and say, Jesus, would you come into my life? I want to be part of your family. I want to know you. I have stuffed up majorly in my life. I have sinned and hurt myself and hurt others. Forgive me. Make me whole. And when you do that, I did that 26, 27 years ago in an army barracks, lying on my bed. When you do that, something incredible happens. You get connected with God. God comes and lives in you. Now, God's all around you, but he comes and lives in you. That's fantastic. I'd love to pray for anybody here this morning that are ready to make that step. Now, I'm not going to call you out the front. I'm not going to embarrass you. I would appreciate if everybody could just have their eyes closed, because this is a personal time. I'd love to pray for you. If you're in that boat and you're saying, today I want to say yes to Jesus, then just do something really simple. Just slip your hand up, and when I see it, put it back down again, and then I'll pray for you. I won't call you out. I won't embarrass. None of that is going to happen. But I just want to know if there are anybody here, if there's anybody here this morning, and you're ready to make that step. Jesus said something really interesting. He said, you know, if you confess me before men, I'll confess you before my Father in heaven. But if you deny me before men. And what he's saying there is that it's really important. It's really good for us to actually publicly acknowledge Jesus. Not just to have a simple underground faith. So if you are in that boat, we won't prolong this. And you want to say yes to Jesus this morning, just slip your hand up. I'll see it. And then put it back down again.